And that was Crosby, Stills, and Nash with, what's the title of that?
Carry On.
Carry On. Brilliant song. Sorry to cut it short. Welcome, listeners, to some talking music from a working class Democratic Socialist perspective, otherwise known as Socialist Alternative Radio. And we're here every other Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Thanks for tuning in. And today we're going to be talking about International Women's Day and upcoming protests against Trumpism, the Trump agenda, everything Trump that we hate. And but also, because we are socialists, we're going to be talking about alternatives to Trump. And real alternatives do not include the Democratic Party, believe it or not. And we're going to be talking about that. And your hosts today are myself, Jeff, and guest host,
Tom.
And Tom's mic is not working for some reason. Are you on three? No, you're on four. Sorry about that. That's my fault, Tom. Go ahead. Say Tom again.
Tom.
Otherwise known as Tomrad. I don't know if you like that nickname, but other people love it. So it's like you're stuck with it. So, yeah, veterans of the struggle here today coming at you with some Democratic Socialist information. But, you know, we're as we say in a lot of shows to the, with the intro, we're not just here to give you alternative news, alternative information, sort of we're not here to just give you an update on, like, radical politics in the broadest sense. We are here specifically for a reason, and that is to be partisans for socialism, for revolutionary socialism, democratic socialism. And we are also wanting you to consider, please, getting involved with socialism, actually becoming a socialist, actually getting involved with a socialist group. We'd prefer it if that was Socialist Alternative, but, you know, people will do what they will do. We often put forward, you know, the general outlook of Socialist Alternative / the Committee for Workers International. Now, Socialist Alternative is a nationwide socialist group that is most well known right now for having gotten elected and reelected a city councilor in Seattle, Washington, named Shama Sawant. Shama is an open member of Socialist Alternative, an open socialist, and when she was elected in 2013, it caused quite a stir internationally, actually, because Shama, you know, as I said, ran as a Social Alternative candidate against long odds and big money. We won. And part of our winning, as was part of the campaign, was pushing for a $15 an hour minimum wage. We turned the election victory into a campaign for a $15 minimum wage, or furthered that campaign in Seattle. And other forces were involved too, but we led that, and we won along with the unions there, some of the unions there, and other activists, of course, and other groups. We won the first nationwide $15 minimum wage in Seattle, Washington. It wasn't nationwide $15 minimum wage. It was the first city in the nation to accomplish that fact back in 2014. And we are very proud of that fact, and it shows what socialists can do and accomplish. We're running another candidate right now, Ginger Jensen, in Minneapolis. Shama first ran citywide. Her second reelection was in a given area, sometimes called wards in certain cities. And Ginger Jensen is running as in a certain ward or area in Minneapolis, also on a $15 an hour minimum wage platform and other demands. And Ginger is well known already as a member of Social Alternative, and Social Alternative is well known as the leader of a $15 minimum wage campaign in Minneapolis that was polling at, like, vast majorities, 60, 70% majorities. And it was going to be on the ballot this past November. And guess who got together and got it off the ballot? This is a quick quiz question. Tom knows the answer. I know the answer. We're waiting to hear from our listeners, but you don't have to call in. Just shout it out. The Democrats and the Republicans got together. The Democratic Party and the Republican Party got together, conspired to get the ballot question removed. It took the place of all but one or two Democrats on the city council. It's all Democrats right now opposing the $15 minimum wage referendum, and getting some Republican judges and Republican Party hacks to go along with that. Because they're already predisposed to that, as are most Democrats, believe it or not, and they successfully got that removed from the ballot. But we are, through Ginger's campaign, resurrecting that. It's getting more publicity. And look up Minnesota 15 Now Minnesota or something like that. 15 Now Minneapolis. I forget the website, and you'll get more information on that. Or look up Ginger Jensen, or go to the Socialist Alternative website, socialistalternative.org. For more information on that. Tom was politely raising his hand. You can just jump in and interrupt me.
My mother didn't raise me that way, Jeff.
I just wanted to say that I'm super impressed with Ginger Jensen's campaign, and she's a working class candidate for office, who's become politicized because of the economic trap that capitalism puts so many people into. They're working, you know, more than one job, sometimes more than two, and they're not able to make groceries to the end of each pay period. So she'll represent a working class, militant working class in the interests of her fellow workers from a socialist perspective. So I just think it's tremendous. I hope it gets emulated in local campaigns all across the country.
Well, there is 15 Now, which was started by Socialist Alternative, but the bigger organization right now is Fight for 15, which is mainly funded by Service Employees International Union and other groups. And you probably have noticed it's gotten publicity when it's happened, the Fight for 15 sort of one-day strikes that have happened in some cities with protests and so on. In fact, that's going to be a kind of subject or subheading of today's show. We're going to be talking about what a call for a general strike means, or what a call for a strike action means at this point in time right now in resisting Trump and so on. And that's an interesting question, because the thinking on that is evolving in maybe not the greatest way, but it's just reality to a certain extent right now. And I want to remind listeners, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Socialist Alternative Radio, talk and music from a working class democratic socialist perspective. We're here every other Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., live over the air, emanating from Tufts Educational Radio here, and I'll give our legal ID in 1 second. But you can also find us at the archive section of WMFO.org. You can listen live stream at WMFO.org. You can also catch us at some of our past shows have been archived at FeenianRising.org or Feenian Rising on Facebook. That is just some fans of the show, socialists that have liked the show. And thank you again, Feenian Rising, for that. We are not. Someone wrote into Socialist Alternative Radio's Facebook page, and I urge you to check it out, and said, "What is the 10-year anniversary of the show?" That was the whole thing, one sentence. So it means, I think that implies some sort of knowledge that the show's been on a while, and it has. Actually, the 10-year anniversary was sometime last year, sometime in 2016.
I didn't realize, Jeff.
Yeah, and I don't know when.
Congratulations.
Exactly. But the show was started by Chris Manschreck and myself back in 2006, as part of the community base here at WMFO in Medford. And by the way, here's our legal ID, WMFO Medford or WMFO in Medford, otherwise known as Tufts Freeform Commercial-Free Community-Based Radio at 91.5 FM, WMFO, also known as Freeform Radio, also known as Tufts Educational Radio. We have lots of monikers. Is that really a word? I don't know. We have lots of names. And so...
Nom de plume.
Nom de plume. Yeah, we have lots of plumes. Lots of plumes coming out of here. And we got on the air, and there have been various people involved with the show. Josh Koritz was involved for a number of years. He's in Socialist Alternative. Myself, pretty consistently, well, totally consistently over the years. That's not to brag. That's just the way it worked out. I would have preferred more people being involved, and I tried to entice people along the years, but we used to be out early in the morning and getting up in the morning. Chris Persampieri was on the show for a while. I'm trying to think of other DJs that were here for a while. Oh, of course, Diego Oyola was on from time to time as a guest host.
Dave,
well, there's been a lot of people that have been on the show once or twice, and I don't blame them if they can't work it into their normal schedule. Danny Keating, many others. Brian Kalouris has been on the show, many, many other people. So I can't, I'm not guilt tripping anyone that didn't stay after one interview.
And also some socialists traveling from other.
Yeah, well, we've interviewed all sorts of people. Dan Labatt, we interviewed when he was running for as a Socialist Party candidate for senator in Ohio. We interviewed, who's the guy with the workers? Working class studies guy from
New
York. No, from New York. I'm spacing on him, partially because the interview wasn't that great. I was very disappointed in him, by the way, if you're listening, which you're not. Who else were interviewed?
The truth will out.
We had a band on, Nothing After Neptune, Stephanie Kreese's band there. We're reminiscing here for a minute, excuse us. We interviewed Rand Wilson, a local activist, and a local, another local activist with Rand, a construction worker. We've lots of interviews. And you know what I was alluding to though is I was always hoping to get a sort of a regular group of DJs trained up and so on doing the show, but it's hard to find the time to go to the training and jump through all the hoops you need to have a show on the air here. Although that's not a criticism, that's just the reality of it. I'm very grateful to the station to allow this kind of programming. And we are unique programming because, again, we're straight out saying, yeah, you should be a socialist. We're not just giving you information. We're straight up saying we're 110% pro-union. You know, eat it. we're not pulling any punches here, whereas everyone else I hear on the radio from a left perspective, and there aren't too many, they seem to be self-censoring a lot. And they seem to be mimicking either the corporate media, like I have to sound like some... idiot that reads from a prompter, or people won't listen to me, or I have to sound like I'm a really laid back dude and not really that political. It's kind of carryover from the 60s-70s vibe still happening, where some of the political shows will be like these guys that were from that time, and they'll be like just trying to be groovy, on the air and not be that political. I'm just really just a liberal, yeah, I know, and that's the problem. So
you see a lot of just sort of
alternative news,
total cynicism at a certain point.
Yeah, or alternative news, and just a grab bag. Anything to the left of Trump is supposedly left. Like today on TV, I got up early to watch the news, partially in preparation for the show. Did anything big happen? Big in quotes, like Tom Perez or Peretz, I forget his name, being elected as the chair of the DNC instead of Keith Ellison. Yawn, and how predictable was that? I mean, how many so-called socialists have to wake up and realize that history does matter, historical materialism in particular? If you just take the slightest historical materialist perspective to the Democratic Party, you can pretty much predict the fact that Sanders, as a populist, is nothing new in the Democratic Party, and that he will, as he did, give the reins over to the centrist, Clinton, when the time comes, the way that Kucinich did, the way that Jesse Jackson did, the way the Mississippi Freedom Party did, the way that every attempt to reform the Democratic Party has followed the same path. Because the Democratic Party is not a membership party. When are you going to get it through your head? It's not a social democratic party. All you people out there that have illusions in reforming the Democratic Party, you can't join the Democratic Party. You can either register to vote as a Democrat, which means nothing, because then you can go vote at whatever you want, right? Means nothing. Or you can try to worm your way into these elitist structures that exist controlling the party. And the way that people worm their way into that is they run for office and get elected. Once you're elected as a Democrat, you can parlay that into some backroom dealings. Or you're just rich enough that you're welcomed in the back door. And that's how the Democratic Party is controlled. There is no union block vote, no form of union affiliations like there are with social democratic parties in other countries. There is no membership. You're freaking kidding yourself if you think that you're a part of the Democratic Party by voting for the Democratic Party, or even going to these little, in some cities, there's these little committees. You can show up, you can go to those, and you have absolutely no power until and if you get elected, and then maybe after you get elected, if you do the right thing, suck up to the right moneyed interests within the Democratic Party, then you can have a say in local Democratic Party politics. Congratulations, you've joined the boys in the back room, and you're running this elitist thing, this elitist electoral machine. You're not running a membership-based political party, not social democratic or any other kind. Same thing with the Republicans. Same thing with the Republicans. Same thing with the Libertarians, etc. You're not doing anything real in terms of mobilizing people into politics. You're just part of an electoral machine.
Another instance close to home was the great Women's March.
January 21st.
Yeah.
That was great in a lot of ways.
That was a great march and demonstration. Probably more people on the common than I've seen since maybe for the longest I've been here. But one of the speakers was Elizabeth Warren, who was talking about fighting for justice, resistance, resisting the Trump agenda.
Yep. Populism.
And that very week, she voted for Ben Carson,
yep,
one of the most ridiculous quote-unquote candidates for anything. And I'm talking about brain surgery, too. I wouldn't go to him.
Right.
If I needed it, right. I'd rather let the tumor swell than have him touch it.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. There were a lot of well thought out criticisms of the lack of politics in that very successful, in terms of numbers, Women's March on January 21st, which Social Alternative totally supported and participated in, but we did not initiate it or control it in any way or have much influence in it or any influence really. So the result, not just from our absence in the planning, but other groups, of course, as well to the left, the result was a very sort of apolitical march in many ways, you know, and the default position was liberal Democrat, and they put liberal Democrats up on the stage. And again, getting back to that point, and it's going to sound like emphasizing it too much or something, but the Democratic Party is not a membership-based political party. It's not a real political party in the sense of building any kind of organization that people can control and create in the image that they want. It's already a monolithic in sense of money of corporate interests. It's a monolith in sense of it consistently is controlled by elements of the ruling class, whether it's the slave owners, the party of the slave owners where it started, or the party of the capitalists, or the party of Jim Crow, you know, and the capitalists throughout its history. So unless you have huge amounts of money, which automatically defaults you into a position of really not really wanting that agenda to continue, you're not going to be able to impact the Democratic Party in any fundamental way. And there are big illusions in that. And a further proof of that is the fact that look at what the Democratic Party did with January 21st. They didn't even have the wherewithal to network effectively, to just get everyone's name or most people's name and then follow them up with do this, this, this for the Democratic Party. That still wouldn't have been real participation in terms of you would have just been following orders of the Democratic Party. But they didn't even do that because their whole idea of holding power is just manipulating votes, just like the Republicans. So if they can get enough votes to stay in power, they're satisfied with that. So let's look at the Perez Ellison thing for a second. So Ellison was the hope of people that thought Sanders was a real socialist or that Sanders was a real left winger and could reform the party. So Ellison was a part of this plan, right? Getting Ellison elected. He's a Minnesota congressman, getting him elected the head of the Democratic National Congress. So the Democratic National Committee, I'm sorry. And then Ellison then would lead this reform of the party. Now, was it absolutely impossible that Ellison would get elected? No, not absolutely impossible, but highly, highly unlikely because of the structures of the Democratic Party, the way it's run. Like Nancy Pelosi said, we're capitalists. This is a political party that's run by corporations. It supports a corporate agenda. It carries out the imperialist wars and proxy wars whenever called on. In fact, it does so more willingly than Republicans to prove their enthusiasm for that sort of thing. And sections of the ruling class will, the capitalist class, they'll give money to both parties almost equally, sometimes more Republican than Democrat, sometimes more Democrat than Republican. Sections of the capitalist class, some are very enamored of the Democrats. You know, the high-tech folks and all that really, really like the Democrats, you know, and give that party a lot of money. And I hate to say party because, you know, I'm trying to explain it's not really a political party in the sense that people tend to think of it. But anyway, so here you have January 21st, this huge rally, and there's no aftermath. There's no, you know, you could say, as the corporate media has, there's more interest in the Democratic Party than there used to be. The Globe had a long article on this. More interest in the Democratic Party than after Trump. You know, and you could include, I would say, I don't think they did, but I would include January 21st in that analysis in quotes. And the numbers they gave, though, were very telling. You know, instead of the local Democratic Party committee where they exist, they're very rare. you'd have 75 people or 100 instead of 50 or 30 or 20. So, you know, they're talking about an increase that is very minimal, but noticeable from their point of view. And then they basically, like, the Democrat Party doesn't know what to do with them to a certain extent. And that's true. That's the point I'm making. They don't know what to do with them. They just want an electoral machine to run smoothly. If they get enough people to run for office, they're satisfied. If they get enough people to go volunteer and door knock, they're satisfied, you know? But populism, including progressive populism, is nothing new to the Democratic Party. People have to wake up and not be so easily fooled. Now we're going through a whole process again of a lot of fooled people. That's one of the, see, Trump gets elected and people want, like, quick, moralistic answers about that. So they say, some people say, and I'm not agreeing with this, I think it's a bit ultra-left, but some people say, hey, well, Trump got elected and it ignited all these protests, so that's a good thing in a way, you know? Well, no, I mean, there's other ways protests could have been ignited. You know, if Clinton was elected, there'd be a lot of things to protest. Would there be as many people on the street initially, immediately? No, of course not. But there would still be eventually huge protest movements under Clinton administration. But the point is that, like, what Trump has also done, yeah, sort of, you know, objectively, you could say Trump is so odious and the policies that he's trying to ram through so unpopular, it's created a huge protest backlash, and we should talk more about what that means and so on, and we're going to. That's a good thing, I guess, if you want to put moral terms on it. But what's the bad thing about Trump? Obviously, his administration is doing these things to hurt working people and immigrants, including immigrants. And also, it is shifting politics to the right in a big way. So now the Democrats appear to be some sort of something with a left thing on it. Well, let's define our terms. If you want to have any sort of sane idea of what left means, then you basically have to say, look, left means one, anti-capitalist, and two, you don't support the political parties of the capitalists. That has to be of big business or the corporations. That has to be the basic definition of left, or else it's meaningless. Guess what? The Democratic Party doesn't fit that definition. Guess what? Any number of left groups in the United States, DSA, Freedom Road, Communist Party, they're not really left-wing. They support the Democratic Party.
I heard this on the radio this morning. Maybe you did too, Jeff. The Democratic Party in conference had this big brouhaha over whether or not to accept large corporate-based money.
They
had at a certain point under, they said at a certain point under Obama, they had scotched that, but no, they brought it back.
Yeah.
And now they were having a debate and a vote over that, and they voted to accept the corporate dark money.
Look, the typical thing is to say, well, when liberals are arguing for the Democratic Party, and they usually just swear at you or try to shame you or something, which is really, really funny, because I'd be ashamed to support the Democratic Party or the Republican Party or the Libertarians. But anyway, they will, if any of them want to actually try an argument on you on Facebook or whatever, they'll say, and you're talking about funding, they'll say, well, look at Sanders. He ran without corporate money. And we'll say the truth. Yeah, that's correct. He did when he ran for president. But we, unfortunately, facts matter. History matters. I've researched Sanders. He ran with corporate money every other time he's run. And not only that, he was a great activist, I'll throw that in.
Champion.
A champion, yes, of raising corporate money and money from rich people for the Democratic Party Senate candidates. He was, in fact, the best fundraiser for the Democratic Party as far as Senate candidates, Democratic Party Senate candidates.
He was an independent.
Independent means absolutely nothing with Sanders, because he, including now and before he ran, and while he ran, of course, when he was a Democrat, in terms of title, he has always caucused with the Democratic Party. I know you know this. I know this is a rhetorical question, but he always caucused with the Democratic Party. He raised money for the Democratic Party. He got committee assignments by the Democratic Party, and as in the words of that guy from Vermont, Howard Dean, a Democratic Party operative and ex-governor of Vermont as a Democrat, Dean said that Sanders votes with the Democratic Party 98% of the time. 98% of the time. And again, this is the party that Nancy Pelosi says, we are capitalist. This is the party that, I just don't want to go through a list of its many, many policy crimes. But let's take one quick one here, because it impacted Massachusetts recently. Do you remember the question four, I think it was, in the recent election?
I hope I voted right on
or
all
two,
those questions.
Maybe it was question two. Sorry,
on,
I got that
on
wrong.
Charter
schools. Question two, yeah. Charter schools. Should we raise the... I hate when people use the word we. Should the elites in Massachusetts be allowed to raise the cap on charter schools? And this would have resulted in more charter schools per year. And charter schools are these private schools, but paid for with our tax dollars, mine included, and Tom's included. But they're run by a private corporation. So it's a form of corporate welfare from the government taxes, state taxes, to the charter schools. And then on top of that, it's part of an overall plan by those that promote charter schools on a national basis, including those who reached into Massachusetts to fund this law, big, big capitalists who want to privatize U.S. education. So this is not the same as your average private school, which is off on the side raising money on its own. I'm not saying private schools are that great either. I'm just saying they're off on the side raising money on their own. They're not getting taxpayer money to exist. And charter schools can then pick any students they want, whereas public schools have to accept all students. So if you can cherry pick students and do things without any oversight and get money from private sources and to fund your propaganda, plus all the money they're getting public from the public taxation for their profits, then basically you have a situation of the steamroller effect that's running over many cities to increase the privatization of education. So the point of the story is that if you look at Hillary, Obama on the one hand, on the other hand, like locally Baker, the governor, Charles Baker, don't ever say Charlie, because that's what he wants. He wants people to think that he, as a capitalist, he's one of the people. He's a man of the people. He is a man of the cap of the boardroom. He's a man of the CEOs. Charles Baker, who is the slimiest politician I've ever met in my life, and I had the misfortune to meet this guy and talk to him for 5 minutes or two. Well, actually, talked to him for about 30 seconds. But anyway, it was a unfortunate, nauseating moment of my life. I can't get back. I think I have post-traumatic meeting Charles Baker stress syndrome. Let's create a new thing. Meeting a right-wing populist stress syndrome. I'm used to progressive so-called populists. I've met Sanders. That didn't bother me. I like talking to Sanders, despite I don't agree with him politically. He seemed like a decent person, relatively speaking.
He was in favor of making ratepayers saddle
Charles. Are we talking about Charles?
Costs of building all the pipelines.
Charles.
In Massachusetts.
Charles. Oh, Charles has a lot of positions that are odious.
And his own attorney general sued him to stop it. And then the board of public works said, I guess we can't do this.
But anyway, to create a list of prominent national and statewide in Massachusetts or any state that this is happening in, Democrats or Republicans, you'll find that they, with a few exceptions, are on board with charter schools. They like charter schools. So here in Massachusetts, you had like all the liberals, like Seth Moulton, and others lining up behind charter schools or being silent on the question. You had Jim and Marjorie on their vomitous liberal talk show that gets so many hours on national public radio. What a theft of the public airwaves that
TV.
Is. Yeah. Basically trying to pretend they didn't really like... They basically pretended to be neutral, which is a joke. You're not... Hey, idiots, you're not neutral. You're as biased as anyone else. And your biases are very, very familiar. On the charter school question, bringing in proponents of the charter school, lifting the charter school cap, Marjorie Egan attacking the teachers' unions all the time... And basically, you had a situation where the whole media, corporate media, was lined up in favor, in Massachusetts, in favor of lifting the charter school cap. All these idiots like, what's that guy on WBZ? I actually wrote to this guy, and he tries to, like get revenge on me in his responses. What is his name? Come on, what is his name? You know this guy. He wears a bow tie. Yeah, he's always pontificating in a nasally voice. He's a complete idiot.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want to summon his name.
What is his name? Anyway, so this guy, a guy that pretends to be neither Republican or Democrat the way that the corporate media does. And it doesn't matter. You can be Republican or Democrat corporate media. You're still spewing the same propaganda for the most part. Anyway, this guy was all for it. So everything was lined up. And then what happened here in Massachusetts was 64% of the brave people that voted it down. All the powers that be lined up to thrust through charter schools, to shove them down our throats, and they lost. They lost bad. And the next day, it was hilarious, because did they say, oh, we were wrong? No, they just didn't say anything. They went to their next issue, you know? And they just reported on it, if they reported on it, and very, you know, oh, gee, okay, 64%. Okay, well, there you go. 64% in American terms, with all the money controlling elections, is a drudging. 64% is a slapping you down in the mud and holding your face in it. That's what 64% is. That is being Massachusetts people not only don't want charter schools, they really don't want charter schools. And if you try to bring that up again, we're going to hit you in the stomach really hard, because it really sucks, you know? And, you know...
Well, the legislature of Massachusetts pulled a fast one on another.
Yeah, they're going to do that
question,
with that too.
The
marijuana one. Yeah,
question.
Yeah, yeah. They want to circumvent
that. Passed by a huge plurality. Yeah, yeah. This legislative group said, oh, we're going to put the kibosh on it for 6 months while we study it.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, they were all opposed to it not all that many years ago, but now they're trying to figure out how they can profit from it. And that's why they're putting a lid on it.
Yep. Yeah, and I know a lot of people that feel very strongly about this because they smoke every day. But I could care. I voted for that ballot question to decriminalize marijuana, or however you want to put it, because I just don't want to see it as another tool for the cops to round up a lot of youth and shove them in prison for no good reason. You know, the mass incarceration thing comes out of the so-called drug war. So any tool that you can remove from that arsenal is a good thing. But on the other hand, I don't want everyone walking around stoned all the time. As a socialist who wants to organize people, who does organize people, I don't want everyone to be like, you know, very comfortable, very mellow at the next event or meeting or rally or something, you know, like
so, Mr. Natural. You know,
yeah. So I don't know. I get in trouble with that argument because what do you mean? I'm fine. I'm like, well, I noticed you fell asleep at the meeting, or I noticed that you're looking at your electronic gadget all the time, and I don't know. I associate the two for some reason. It seems like a kind of addiction, but whatever. Yeah, let's not get into the whole marijuana thing. I'm glad it's decriminalized and whatever. But, of course, you know, the other side of the coin is there's a lot of marijuana capitalists out there. Do I want people to make a profit off of marijuana as with anything else? No, I don't want that. I don't want that. So, but anyway, the point of the original story was that you can say the Democratic Party and Republican parties are different, and I agree with you, they are different, but are they different enough? How different are they? What's their level of similarity, and on what important issues are they most similar on? You know, it's some of the stances the Democratic Party has taken on, in some places, you got to qualify this now, in some places where they've actually tried to do something, some defense of, say, funding for Planned Parenthood or for LGBTQ rights and so on. That's very, very important. But when you look more closely, the pressure on that comes from people organized, not because they thought of it themselves. And they come to it late. You know how late the Obama administration came to LGBTQ rights. You know how late Clinton came, and only momentarily, to supporting like $50 minimum wage. If you take a realistic, factual, fact-based outlook on the position the Democratic Party takes, you find that the cause for them taking it is the effect of the protests and movements that have already spent years grinding away at the indifference or opposition of the Democratic Party in league with the Republican Party. But then there's the issues with that's clear they agree on, for the most part, charter schools, wars for oil, you know, aggression against Russia. One thing I noticed, I think we talked about this last time, during the election, and let me see if you've noticed this as well, during the election and even in the aftermath, where the liberals, a lot of liberals got so incensed so much for Clinton, for Hillary Clinton, that they would end up putting forward arguments that were actually quite conservative. So here, these are liberals, but they're putting, and even some people that would call themselves left, but they're putting forward arguments about American values, who's more qualified, because Clinton has already helped imperialism destroy Libya and attack Syria. That makes her qualified, Honduras. And that's a good thing. That's a good thing, yeah, that she supported the coup in Honduras to keep that country impoverished and under thrall of U.S. imperialism. I'm really happy about that qualification. That's great. You know, so you had a lot of liberals and leftists saying these very conservative things about the Constitution, the Founding Fathers, American values. They're still doing it with Trump. Trump Madeline likes Russia.
Albright on the,
all
on
that.
The
Madeline
platform.
Albright, yeah. All that stuff. Said, oh, well, that, so this is liberalism, huh? Okay. Yeah, it is, actually. It really is. In
the good
true definition of liberalism, pro-capitalist, but with you know, a sprinkling of Keynesianism here, so sometimes, right now, not, it's all neoliberal, with liberalism, you know, the happy, friendly face of capitalism versus the frowning, you know, Trumpish face of capitalism, you know, but still, there's so many fundamental similarities when you get to economics. And when you get to foreign policy, or as we say, U.S. imperialism, then you say to yourself, okay, yeah, there are some differences, but there's so much alike that I am screwed, you know? And there's a layer of people, working class people and youth especially, who have seen through the Democratic Republican Party duopoly, even under Trump. Because like I started to say, the whole thing about one of the rotten things about Trump, and there are so many, is that he's shifted politics, his administration has shifted politics to the right to make the Democrats seem to be some sort of alternative to Trumpism, and they're not, fundamentally. They're going to go along with a lot. They already have gone along with a lot of what Trump is doing. They try to normalize Trump. They put forward, that's what I mean about putting forward conservative arguments. How many liberals have you seen recently, liberal Democrats say, and this fits in with their true profile, but again, not the perception among some people, that, well, he's our president. Trump is our president, so we have to, you know, obey that, get used to it, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like you said, the voting is very checkered. There is only one Democratic congressperson that voted consistently, and this was based on old news. I don't know where it stands now. This was like 2 weeks ago. Voted consistently against Trump's appointments to his administration. All the rest, including Sanders and Warren, voted for some of those appointments. Sanders was up to like 3 or 4. Warren was at 2 or 3 at least, including Carson, as you said. It's absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. If in terms of, not in terms of what I expect in the Democratic Party, I expect that. In terms of what people's perceptions are, the Democratic Party is any kind of alternative to Trump.
Well,
the Democratic Party is an alternative to Trump in certain issues, but on core issues, it's not.
When they get there in elected office, they are always relying on the old saw, I vote my conscience, I follow my conscience. I'm not
as
really
an individual.
yeah. My moral compass.
Yep.
As opposed to, that's because their parties have not put any demands on them. Because
they're not membership parties.
They're
again,
not
there's
membership
no accountability.
Parties. They're not democratic in their own process.
I'll give you another example of that. Right now, because there is more political energy on the left, and political energy among liberals, and those are two distinct categories in my opinion, but not in terms of perception sometimes, that people want to run for office. You know, I'm noticing this in Worcester. There's people that want to run for office, and they've talked about this before under the Obama administration, almost did it. But now there's a bunch of, you know, activists in the community that want to run for office. And unfortunately to them, not only doesn't it matter if they run as a Democrat, And they do support a Democratic Party politician who's already in one of them in Worcester's dominated by Democrats, the city council. It might be solely Democrats. I have to check on that. And they say to people on the left, the true left, like Socialist Alternative members, say, well, they want us to support their candidacy. We say, well, you know, we don't support Democratic Party candidacies, because of the, you know, we go into the history of the Democratic Party, the local history even of the Democratic Party, And we want, we believe in, we do support left-wing independence. We've supported left-wing Greens. We will support left-wing, you know, getting a coalition together, if as long as it's independent, the Democratic Party, and not getting its money from the big corporations, either locally or nationally. So on those two things, all of a sudden, it doesn't matter to a lot of people that call themselves liberal or left. And again, with the liberal part, it does fit in with their profile. They say, well, local elections are nonpartisan. Did you ever hear that one?
Nonpartisan.
As an excuse for, it doesn't matter, I'm a Democrat. I'm gonna run and roll with the Democrats. Well,
what about in
nonpartisan
Boston?
Nonpartisan. It's just a shill. It's just something that both parties, the Democratic and Republican parties, like, because in certain places, and this benefits, again, can benefit the Democrats or the Republicans more, people used to vote the party ticket, so to speak. You'd vote all Democrat, you vote all Republican. And so the solution, quote unquote, and there's some people that claim to be for more democratic elections. I think this is a democratic thing. It's very anti-democratic, not Democratic Party, but small D democratic. All of a sudden, they would outlaw that in a lot of places and say you can't put your party affiliation down. Now, this is horrible because that just means you have secret party affiliations that are just as monolithic as they were before, and just as you know. But you're giving the people less information about who they're voting for. And it allows this cover of people to say, if the party's unpopular in their area, they don't go around saying they're Republican. They just say, I'm Joe Schmo or Jill Schmo running for office. So it individualizes everything. People wonder why American politics is so personalized, so individualized. Well, it's part of it. It's also the money aspect of it. But it's part of it is that in so many places you're not even allowed by law to put your name on the ballot. Now, you can run a campaign stressing that you're a part of the Democratic Republican Party, but they often do, but sometimes they don't, especially people that want to appear left-wing won't stress that, yes, they're a registered Democrat, yes, they're going to support, they've supported the Democratic Party and those kind of policies and so on. So for us, we say, well, what party are you in? And if none, or if you're in one, or if none, what's your program? You know, and then all of a sudden, people that consider themselves leftist, they come up with a program that basically mimics the Democratic Party program or whatever. I mean, it's all, right now, there's a tremendous amount of confusion and right-wing drift in American politics. But there's also incredible amount of protest, which is really good. And there is a layer of people we haven't talked about yet who are ignored for the most part, even by leftists, even by sometimes people in Socialist Alternative. I would argue there's a big layer of people that have seen through the Democratic Party. They've ideologically figured it out. The Democratic Party and Republican Party is no way forward for working people. There's a lot of people out there that have come to that conclusion before, during, and after the recent election cycle. And on top of that, there's a layer of people I would add to that layer who are, they didn't necessarily ideologically figure it out. They didn't say to themselves, I need something left of the Democratic Party, or I'm a socialist, or whatever. But they're just disgusted by the weakness of the Democratic Party. You know, how could they lose that? How could they go along with the Electoral College when the popular vote went for this Democratic Party candidate? How can they not put up a bigger fight against Trump? How can they do that? There's a layer of that, you know? Then there's, of course, the people that are just disgusted by bourgeois capitalist electoral politics and its corruptions. And that's not the healthiest layer. You know, people can get into a habit of not voting, and that's not good for socialists. So as socialists, we want people to vote, but we have to have something to vote for, you know, for themselves. That's for the interests of working people and youth, not something that is going to hurt them, which is what's happening to us. We want people to be able to vote, because voting per se, whether it's for a candidate or for an issue, will be a big part of a democratic socialist society and a big part of it getting there, you know. So it's not good to like tune out of the whole thing and not vote at all. But I think there's a layer of conscious voters, for the most part, who are ready for more than the Democratic Party, and ready for more, of course, are disgusted by Trump. And that might even include some, weirdly enough, in American politics, some Trump voters right now or in a few years. There's this phenomenon, I don't know if you've heard about it, but it's pointed out a bit in the corporate media that in analyzing elections, they found people, a layer, like I keep using the word layer, I apologize, but they found a group of people, pretty large group of people that voted for Obama, the Obama administration, twice, and then voted for Trump. And again, if you want to, you know, religiously, I'll say, support the two-party system and the duopoly, like a lot of liberals are now, in a very nasty way, then you got to go, you got to roll with what you're promoting and what you're building. You're building an inevitable ping-pong effect where if people live through a Republican or a Democratic Party administration for long enough, and the only way out, seemingly, I'm not agreeing with this, but seemingly in terms of all the propaganda and everything, is to vote for the other part, the other party. Again, we're in the duopoly world here. Then that's what they'll do, right? So people suffered under Obama. A lot of people got disgusted. Things weren't changing fast enough, or weren't changing at all, or changing for the worse. And they end up voting for Trump because that's the rules in America, right? The two-party system. Now, we don't agree with that Socialist Alternative. We see the need for a workers' party, a party of 99%, a party that will break that paradigm. But until a party like that is in people's faces, a lot of people don't see it. It's not their fault. It's the corporate media runs interference. I mean, during the election, I don't know if you heard this, but I heard people like on NPR and other places just say straight out, we have a two-party system. Really, right on the air. We're a two-party system. Just totally ignoring the Stein, Baraka campaign, ignoring all the other, we're a two-party system, shut the hell up. That's what they were saying to people, you know, in their reporting or in these talk shows.
It's amazing how people will hear that and go, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And
try to make a virtue out of it.
Because I don't remember anyone in my growing up, I'm sure you can major in political science, but I don't know what that includes, but who are not really given much of an idea about what an actual participation in politics would include, or in, you know.
Oh yeah, right. Oh yeah, that's true.
What it would mean. I mean, some people would think, I'm already working all day long. I'm tired. I don't know if I can get involved in anything else. I got
the answer is
kids.
Yes, you can. There's where there's a will, there's a way.
Yes, that's true.
We've thought of these things, people. If you want to become a socialist, but you work like I do and you have a family like I do, you can do it. It's called having childcare at meetings, if necessary. It's called, pushing yourself and going to rallies, helping to organize things, getting involved in your union if you're in one, getting involved. You know, there's a million ways.
Well, it also
to get politically
involves,
active.
It also involves
a lot of it's education too.
Yeah, that's I was going to say education, or if you're unfortunate in who's been trying to homeschool you or whatever. You can talk with other people and
yeah.
seek them out, and,
yeah.
and that's a good, that's a way that people learn. That's a way I've learned, yeah. whatever I've learned. And, but it is, it also has to do with why would you do this? What's in it for you? Well, it's kind of like a discovering your own potential to be a part of the world, you know, and not to just go under your shell.
You know, when Shama Sawant ran for office, for example, member of Social Alternative, open socialist. I donated money. I went to Seattle on my own dime and campaigned. Went door to door for a week. I'm not saying everyone can do that, and that did set me back a bit, I have to admit. But you can do that. You can donate your time and resources, you know. Your voice, as they say in liberal land. Your voice. Voice, voice, voice. Amplify your voice. You got to have your voice, you know, all that stuff. That's there's a grain of truth there. You know, you make your voice heard, and you will have an effect. You will have an effect. I've seen people that absolutely hated me, actually, when they first heard me speak, that then later admitted what I had to say made some sense. And I'm not just saying that about me as an individual. I mean, I learned these ideas. I started out as, a lot of our politics, we have to tell these stories in America because everyone's so focused on the individual. Because the corporations want them to be that way. They don't want us to think collectively. They want us to think together. They don't want us to think in solidarity. But I'll just give you the story because maybe this is you and you can do the same thing if you want. I started off a very conservative working class background, you know, in a conservative working class neighborhood, and a combination of events and stumbling across socialist literature in college and being assigned some of it. And hearing the Clash music, getting involved then in politics. I wasn't a socialist, but got involved in anti-nuclear war stuff back in the early 80s, Amnesty International, human rights, all sorts of stuff that is, you know, kind of dominated by liberals usually. One thing led to another. I'll go through the whole story again. I've done this on the air before, but basically, you know, the point is the transition from conservative to revolutionary socialist is not because I'm some strange person. It's because without a mass workers' party and so on, I kind of got lucky running into things here and there, but I also looked for them consciously. Like when I was in college and realized that I was a socialist, then I went back to I went looking for socialist groups to join. I didn't just try to keep it sort of desultory, you know, reading, you know, material. No, it's just like, boom, I want to get involved. And anyone can make that decision. Even in a country with no workers' party, no mass workers' party. Now, some places it's hard, like in Socialist Alternative, there are members that are, we call, at large, that are in places where there's no group has got together yet in the United States. And yet there's a way to be a member there. You know, there's a lot you can do. You don't have to be captive to the cliches about what workers think in this country or what people think in this country. There's literally tens of millions of people that think outside the two-party system. There's tens of millions of people that identify as socialists in some way. Now, it is important to how you define that, and that's a big, big thing, but and what you do about it. But it is hard in this country without there being a workers' party or the recent past of a workers' party or social democratic party of some sort to kind of point you in the direction of political activity, to give you an alternative media much bigger than what exists in the United States, etc. Anyway, we want to talk about, if I can switch gears here rather rapidly, is that all right, Tom?
That's fine.
I want to talk about the International Women's Day, March 8th. International Women's Day started as a socialist holiday, actually, for working women. And this year, they're coming off of the strength of the Women's March, at least numerical strength of the Women's March on January 21st, is the idea that International Women's Day, coming up very quickly, Wednesday, March 8th, that should be a big deal for the anti-Trump protest movement. And Socialist Alternative agrees with that. And there's some you know, stuff I'd like to read in a second about that, that we're putting out about that through Shama Sawan and other people, other ways of getting it out there. Look around in your area for either protests or forums or meetings on International Women's Day. It is a Wednesday. It is a work day. I'm helping to organize a protest initiated by Socialist Alternative out in Worcester. We're going to start at around 5 p.m. in front of City Hall. Basically a standout for women's rights. If a lot of people show up, we'll, you know, make it more vociferous and so on, but more loud. But we just want something to happen. In Worcester, for example, there was no protest on January 21st. Everyone went to Boston, I guess, so that was interested in doing that. Actually ran into some people on the street because we did these anti-inauguration protests, which were pretty good. Not as big as the protests right after Trump got elected that we initiated, but these were still pretty solid in some ways. And we ran into people who would walk by, and Worcester doesn't have that much foot traffic, by the way, but people would walk by and say, oh yeah, hi, this is great. And I'm going to Boston tomorrow. Because it was the next day to the Women's March. Oh, that's great. We're going to be there too, blah, blah. So basically, International Women's Day this year, of course, would be anti-Trump, we hope. And we were putting forward demands in Worcester, which I think other nationwide, I think people will be putting forward to a certain extent, at least I hope, defend and fund Planned Parenthood, for example, create a system of free childcare in the United States, at least 12 weeks paid paternity leave in the United States, you know, family leave, in other words, you know, things that would impact women immediately, even if we started to go in that direction. Notice, I mean, you're Tom, we're old enough to remember, daycare was a big issue for the women's movement.
Yes, it was.
In our union, in fact, yes. We both work at Harvard. We're in the Harvard AFSCME local there. And remember, we had dignity, democracy, and daycare on our banner, right? Well, the daycare thing got dropped, except for now there's a token fund that you can apply for to get to pay about 1/5, if you're lucky, of your daycare costs. And I've lived through this recently, so I know. But the original idea was on-site daycare at Harvard. We were going to force, just as one example of this movement back in the 70s and early 80s.
Not just for infants or toddlers, but I heard about elder care? Warning elder care.
Well, that was something that, remember Maureen Mahoney? She was coming in. There was a union activist, to the extent that one can be an activist in our union, pushing for elder care. And she was so, and she was right. And we agreed with that and started to put that on our demands. But this was already after the whole thing had for some reason, well, reasons we can talk about, but it would take a while, crested and fell away. And we rarely hear anyone. Every once in a while, I hear someone talk about it, and they say the same thing I'm saying. Why isn't anyone talking about this? This is so huge. The cost of childcare is so expensive. It's like what's happened to the cost of college. It's exploded out of control. So many women are still, in this day and age, when you need two incomes in a family, if you're in a gay relationship or heterosexual relationship or whatever, you need two incomes, okay? If possible, if you're a single mom or a single dad, you still need another income. You don't have it, but you need it, right? So people have to work now. It's not like one income can cover things 99% of the time. So in this framework, in this day of most women being in the workplace, which is true, right? Many, many women are still forced to drop out for a while because the cost of childcare is equivalent to or more than their check, their take-home pay. I've heard that a lot directly from people. So, what are you doing now? Well, I had to leave my job because we figured out that my check didn't cover daycare. Or the other way around, sometimes the husband has to quit the job. Or some people rely on extended family. That's very difficult, but they managed to cobble that together, which is great. I don't begrudge them that, but not everybody can do that. You know, extended family isn't in the area, or extended family is not up for it, meaning grandma and grandpa can't handle it, or they're not around, or they've passed away or something. So you have this whole group of people, huge tens of millions of people in the country, maybe hundreds of millions, who can't, well, not hundreds of millions, but 100 million or 50 million or whatever, I don't know, who can't really afford childcare without a major disruption to their lives, major poverty, or say it's a couple that negotiates it with changed schedules, dropping out of the workforce slightly for a time. That is the whole career thing that many women complain about. That because of
if they have that flexibility,
if they have some sort of career, if they have the flexibility, but if having a child, taking care of the child when it's young, takes them out of all sorts of things related to seniority, getting promotions, which is tied to pay and all that kind of stuff. And it's really, so why are people talking about the very concrete, very important element of heavily subsidized or free child care like already exists in other countries? You know, like, again, I refer to this movie a lot, but Sicko by Michael Moore, and I have a lot of problems with Michael Moore's politics. He's got his head buried in the Democratic Party again. But for a while, when he was an independent thinker, he put out that film Sicko, back when he supported the Labor Party. Remember those days?
I do.
And in Sicko, he is looking at, as an offshoot of free health care in other countries, or heavily subsidized health care in other countries, he was looking at related issues like childcare, which, like, he's focused on France in one part of the film, and they got not only very, very minimal payment necessary, like literally token payment, like $5 a day or something, to nothing, to not only having free or heavily subsidized childcare, but people coming into your house and helping you. Remember that part of the film? It's kind of funny, where a woman was there to make food and do laundry and clean a little bit, and basically help the mother, and he just kept making a joke out of it. You're here to do what? Make me a sandwich. Come on, you know, it was really kind of funny, and yet that's the reality in a lot of places. If you look at social indicators for the United States, we're down at the bottom of the list in a lot of cases, including just like two countries in the world without guaranteed paid family leave, meaning maternity and paternity leave. That is Papua New Guinea and United States. Do you ever see that
stress,
one?
Stress.
Yeah.
The ravages of stress.
Yep.
And the life expectancy statistics are going down, too.
And, of course, Trump's whole attack on women's rights. By the way, this is WMFO Medford, or WMFO in Medford, Tufts Freeform commercial-free, community-based radio. We're a little slice of that community base. We're socialist alternative radio, talking music from a working-class, democratic socialist perspective. And we will have a musical interlude in a few minutes, if that's okay. But back to International Women's Day, which should be the bulk of the story, I think, today. I don't think we're going to get to some of the stuff we wanted to, Tom. I'm apologizing, but, you know, obviously it's an organic process here. So there's some very basic